This hour, are we Harvard? Are we Rome? Rome first. Amnesty, as we heard last hour, may be difficult to define. Well, here's another word that dictionaries aren't much help with. Empire, as in, is the U.S. an empire or not? Critics of U.S. foreign policy tend to answer yes, and proponents no. Is the downside of empire having the adjective imperialist define our actions, or is it the implication that one day there will be a book about us entitled The Decline and Fall of, after Gibbon's History of the Roman Empire? The Founding Fathers drew on what they knew about the Roman Republic in fashioning our government, so are comparisons with the Roman Empire inevitable? And more importantly, helpful? Well, Cullen Murphy, who edited the Atlantic Monthly for 20 years and now writes for Vanity Fair, has a new book that does just that. Are We Rome? The Fall of an Empire and the Fate of America is just out from Houghton Mifflin. Welcome to WNYC, Cullen Murphy. Hello.
It's great to be here, Brian.
First of all, do you accept that the United States is an empire?
As you were just saying, the definition, the dictionaries are not much help. Definitions of empire are all over the place, and each empire is pretty well different from the next. But I think on balance, yes, I do. We are not exactly like the British Empire, and we're not exactly like the Roman Empire, but we have a good number of characteristics in common.
Does it matter whether we define ourselves as an empire or not?
I don't think so. I think what matters, and this goes to the heart of the comparison I was trying to draw with Rome, what matters is that we are the wealthiest, most complex, and most powerful society of our time. And Rome was the same thing in the West for its time. Societies like that are going to have a lot in common, even as they also have a lot of differences. And I wanted to take a look at the things that we had in common.
You know, I think most people probably get their Roman history from Shakespeare by way of HBO with a little Monty Python, and have the vague idea that Rome started as a republic with a Senate, a lot of stabbings, and Cleopatra led to a dictator. The empire grew and grew. Everyone got fat and lazy and decadent. Nero fiddled and Caligula did unspeakable things. And, you know, the barbarian tribes, the Visigoths and Vandals, were able to sack the city and plunge the world into the Dark Ages, the 32nd version of the Roman Empire. Close?
Well, all those things happened. So why don't we let that version stand as just kind of a benchmark? But a lot of other things happened too that that don't make it onto HBO, and those are important things. Kind of slow changes that are hard to see, like in our own lives. For instance, it's hard to see them happening in front of our eyes, but it's easier to see some of them happening in history. And those are some of the things that I try to get to. For instance, what happens with military power when you have too much to do and not enough resources, or what happens when you begin to give away your government to the private sector, or what happens when you begin to think of yourself as being the center of the universe? Those kinds of things begin to creep up on you.
We'll go through some of those things. I mean, you have a list in your book, basically, of similarities and differences, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, not so much. Well, there is one place where I when I was beginning this project, I sat down and tried to make a kind of ledger book of what the similarities and differences were, just to get a handle on it. And of course, you know, there are a lot of differences. I'm not sure Americans would actually like Romans as people. But a handful of large similarities really do stand out.
So go ahead, give us the list of all six, because that's the core of your book, and people should hear it.
Okay, a couple of them I've already mentioned. One has to do with simply the military issue and the manpower issue that we face, and we're seeing the results of this in Iraq. But it really predates Iraq, and it's going to survive Iraq. There's the giving away of government power to private interests. There's the American inability, I think, to get outside of ourselves and see ourselves the way the rest of the world sees us, and to understand how the minds of other people work. There's the borders issue, how important is it to maintain your borders as a kind of you know, impassable membrane. How important is it to be able to be bringing newcomers in all the time?
How did Rome, because obviously we're struggling with that, we're doing, you know, half our programming about it this week. What was the Rome immigration issue?
Well, in the end, the immigration issue was pretty significant. When Rome fell technically the Western Empire fell in the middle of the 5th century AD, and what that really means is the final disintegration occurred, and too many different groups of tribes from outside had been let in with their armies and given control of various parts of the empire, and gradually the term empire became meaningless. But before that, for a long period of time, for a period of about 500 years, Rome existed as truly one of the world's great assimilationist societies. It expanded to include many people who were not Romans. It made them Romans. It made a home for people from outside the empire who came into the empire, people we would call barbarians, who also became Romans, who recognized the power of the culture and the great benefits of Roman stability. So in both a negative and positive sense, there are a lot of similarities there. I think it's a mistake to think of Rome as having been just simply overrun by barbarians.
Mm-hmm. So if I was Pat Buchanan, I might say we're about to grant amnesty to the Visigoths and the Vandals.
Yes, if you were Pat Buchanan, you might say that. But I think a wiser view is that most of these people are the kinds of people who actually embody American values, just as most of the people coming into the Roman Empire were people who sought what Rome had to offer and helped keep the empire vital.
Listeners, we can take your calls for Cullen Murphy, who asks, "Are we Rome?" in his new book. What lessons can we take from ancient history, and how do you think we should learn from it? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or email brianlehrshow@wnyc.org. Perhaps instead of worrying about falling like Rome, we should be focused on emulating Rome and lasting 1,000 years.
Well, I certainly hope we can, and there's a famous remark by the South African novelist J.M. Coetzee about the problem that empires have, which is they're always trying to hold on to everything exactly the way it is. They're just desperate to survive, to kind of preserve the status quo in amber. And I think that's a problem that we face right now.
Does that lose sight of what made the empire so powerful in the first place?
The Roman Empire had a strong set of values, as America has a strong set of values. I think what happens with empires, and it happened with Rome, and I would argue that it is happening with America as well, is that to some extent the acquisition of this global role, culturally and militarily, it's partly deliberate and it's partly by accident, and this role creeps up on you, and then suddenly you find yourself in a situation, and it's not always clear how you should behave. Sometimes your original values are lost.
In fact, isn't that your first similarity, that we share a tendency to see ourselves as the center of the universe?
Rome had a monument in its very center, which was called the omphalos, which really means just the belly button. It regarded itself as this very place was supposed to be the belly button, the umbilicus of the world. So that's how literally they took it. And
reminds me of Dick Cheney's Christmas card. You know, that one that said, "And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?" You cite that in the book.
Absolutely. To my mind, the hubris of that sentiment. Now, admittedly, he was quoting Benjamin Franklin, but that just shows you how deeply rooted that sense of destiny is in American is in American life.
Is that a tendency of every group of people to some degree, if they have the opportunity?
Of course it is. And, you know, you'll note if you go to any group of people and ask them to draw a map of the world, they'll always, you know, whether it's Australia or East Timor, they'll put themselves at the center of the map. But when you combine that tendency with awesome power, then it just leverages the problem into something different. You know, you go to Washington, there's a stock phrase that you hear all the time, which is, about the president as the most powerful man in the most powerful city in the world. It's almost like you just press a key and the words come out. Well, that frame of mind, it's as if, you know, only he, only we matter, and it can get you into all sorts of trouble.
Cullen Murphy, my guest on WNYC, former long-term editor of The Atlantic Monthly, now with Vanity Fair, and the author of the new book, Are We Rome? The Fall of an Empire and the Fate of America. And our phones are ringing off the hook. So, Saeed in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Saeed.
Oh, good morning, Brian. Thank you for this discussion. It really makes my subscription to WNYC worth it.
Go ahead.
I support America. I support what I do believe is an American empire, but I think I am the reason that American empire is good. My parents were born in Pakistan. I came here as a two-year-old boy, very much in the same way that David Brooks is describing the ideal, and I really don't see a bad side from it.
We'll go on to that discussion later in the hour, from Are We Rome to Are We Harvard. Saeed, thank you very much, and we're going to go right to James in Manhattan. James,
yes.
On WNYC.
Hi. You know, the underlying assumption of your guest's point here seems to be that the fall of Rome was somehow a bad thing. I don't think the Germans or the British or the French or all the successor states of Europe would say that. In fact, everything we know about Rome that we're talking about now, aside from Brian's little summary of what HBO tells us about Rome, comes from Oxford and Cambridge and all the barbarian universities. The world was a much better place after new forms of society emerged with the end of the Roman Empire.
So James, we're going to leave it there. And a great contrast between these first two callers, Cullen. One saying, well, what's so bad if the United States is an empire? What other organization of the world would be better? Neil Ferguson wrote a whole book to that effect. And James, on the other hand, saying, wait a minute, empire is almost inherently bad, so why should we be trying to stave off the fall?
Well, that's right. And I'm going to try to be Solomonic here and agree with both Saeed and James.
Good luck.
I think Saeed, actually, his story is a very Roman kind of story. You would have found a lot of people inside the empire with the kind of heritage that he describes, just as you find lots of people inside America with, like Saeed and many members of my own family with that kind of heritage. But let me focus on James's point, because he's wrong in the sense that I believe that the fall of Rome was a bad thing. I don't. I cannot. No American would have wanted to live for a second in Rome. It was a slave society. Women and others were oppressed. The income gap was just phenomenal, far worse than the one that we complain about now. And you know, good riddance, I say. That's not my point here. What I'm trying to get at is, if you're looking at two very large and very important systems, what are the factors that might destabilize them? And I actually think America is something worth preserving, unlike Rome, which I think was worth finding a way to change. To the extent that we care about the things that America stands for that are good, how do we protect those things? And some of the problems that Rome had are also problems that America faces. That's why I worry about them.
When we continue in a minute, I want to bring up one of the other comparisons that you have mentioned between current United States and ancient Rome, which is privatization of government services. So I'll ask you if Rome had a Halliburton, and you seem to go out after the neocons pretty heavy, almost as a bottom line here. And we will take a lot more of the phone calls and emails that are coming in, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Lehrer Show it's Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org, as we continue to ask, are we Rome? Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. I want to remind you that you are all producers of this show, so visit the new page on our website called You Produce. State a fact, pose a question, suggest a guest, a topic, or an entire series, or make a correction. See You Produce at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We continue with Cullen Murphy, his new book, Are We Rome? The Fall of an Empire and the Fate of America. And Cullen, here's an email that just came in that says, please ask Cullen Murphy if he takes account only of Rome as a model for empire, or whether he also takes account of Rome as a model for a republic, which it was for the founding fathers.
Mainly I'm concerned with Rome and America, Rome as it's comparable to America in its present state. But yes, I do consider, to some extent, Rome as a republic, and I consider some of the issues that arose that led to the republic falling. This was a the problem of a republic becoming a tyranny was so much on the minds of our founding fathers, and they had the example of Rome on their minds continually. They knew what had happened. They didn't want it to happen in this country, and things like checks and balances in the Constitution have their origin in Roman ideas. Of course, what happened in Rome, there are many factors, but the size of the state became so big, the republican forms became outmoded, something had to take its place. Eventually, there was an imperial system. Some people worry now, looking at the tussle between the legislative and the executive branch, about whether we're heading there ourselves, and that's very much an issue worth thinking about, and I do take that up to some extent in my book. I worry about it somewhat myself.
Another emailer asks, I'm wondering if Cullen has heard of another book on the same subject published in 2000, The Twilight of American Culture by Morris Berman. Berman draws numerous parallels between Rome before the fall and the U.S. today, but also offers a solution, the monastic option. He argues that an educated class of people should live quiet academic lives centered on preserving our culture so it might be resurrected in the future. It's a bleak vision, he writes, but I wonder if Cullen has any solutions to offer himself. Did you read that Berman book?
I did read that Berman book, and if he's at a university, in a way, he's already found the solution that he's advocating. I do have certain things that I would propose, and perhaps we're getting ahead of ourselves, but one of them is to support the institutions in our society that enhance assimilation, embrace assimilation rather than try to fend off outsiders. And another one is to enact a program of national service, just to take some of the pressure off the military, and again to build a sense of national character. And a third one is to stop giving away the government to the private sector. We are going to regret this in a big way. We may be already regretting it now, but if you can imagine it 50 or 100 years from now, it's going to be a lot worse.
You know, he talks about leading a quiet academic life to protect our values, and yet a similarity between the two cultures might be that both were full of writers convinced that we'd lost track of the virtues that made the societies great. Look at all of that going around today.
Well, that's true, and another comparison is look at all the satirists. We are the Rome and America were hothouses for political and social satire. It's one of the great similarities between the
so
two places.
So Colbert is an indicator of the fall.
he may well be, and
I mean, you could argue that Colbert is an indicator of the health of our society, because this kind of mocking can spring up when things go bad.
Well, that's true. In Rome, of course, there by the time the empire came along, there were very few other outlets for dissent than satire. There was nothing like democracy. There was no other way to change your government. And of course, in Rome, Stephen Colbert eventually would have been exiled to the shores of the Black Sea, if he hadn't simply been beheaded. But the kind of satire that he represents is it has roots that go right back to Rome.
Tarun in Clifton, you're on WNYC. Hello.
How are you, sir, Mr. Bryan?
Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. Well, we are not like Rome. We don't treat people the same. I've been to games here. Like, people who we know they are illegal and everything, they get special treatment just because they are good at something. There are 50,000 people cheering them up. And there's someone who's doing your everyday chores. You're not treating them like you're not even respecting them.
So does that make us, Cullen Murphy, like Rome or not like Rome?
You know, the attitude of people who are already inside a place towards people who are coming into the place is always going to be complex. There just isn't a simple way to describe what happens. Some people are going to be treated badly, and perhaps the next generation, they are going to be the children of those same people are going to be ruling the roost. This is just the nature of flows between human societies. My point about both America and Rome is that looked at in over time and in the aggregate, this is actually a very healthy thing. It was good for Rome to have new blood. It is good for America to have new blood. And I'm leaving aside whatever the individual relationships may be between between people.
One of the comparisons you make is privatization. Did Rome have a Halliburton?
Yes, Rome had many Halliburtons. Their names were Visigoths, Huns, Ostrogoths. Rome didn't have enough people to do many of its chores, especially its military chores. And today, the United States military is in a similar position. We have to hire civilian contractors to do all sorts of things that were once military jobs. The Romans had to hire outsiders to do military jobs, too. And as it happens, those people were what we call the barbarians, who came into the Roman army and served, and often served very well. We are hiring a different sort of person. We're hiring companies. But in a way, they're performing the same kind of jobs and the same kind of functions. And I think they represent the same kind of problem, which is that power gets out of your hands. It gets in the hands of the private sector, whether it's Alaric and his Visigoths or some private company. And this is a problem that goes well beyond the military. It goes into our highway systems, our prisons, our sewers, airports, medical care. Everything is becoming privatized.
So you don't want Governor Corzine to sell the Garden State Parkway? Is that it?
any one of these things might make sense when you look at it in isolation. And I'm sure many of them do, but here's the worrisome thing: if you're doing this virtually every day, every level of government, from local on up to the federal, you're giving some function away, giving it to somebody else to do.
Why not look at that as decentralizing and letting the many creative engines in the private sector work, rather than trying to have the government hold on to as much centralized power as possible, which would be worse for a society?
Well, maybe history will show that's the positive effect of this. The reason why I bring up the example of Rome, where something similar happened, is because, although it took a long time to realize it, that decentralization was not decentralization is the reason why we have what is now called Western Europe with 20 different countries, rather than a unified place that was Rome. The problem is that if you do too much of this, the government actually just loses the power to do very much at all. When it needs to push buttons to accomplish certain kinds of activity, it finds that the buttons aren't connected to anything, because in between there's something else. There's a private company, or there's a private person, and a lot of the trouble that Rome had at the end was just not being able to mobilize itself in the face of threats for this reason.
Colin Murphy, author of Are We Rome? The Fall of an Empire and the Fate of America, my guest on WNYC. And Julie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Julie.
Hi. You know, I'm in the middle of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Huh.
And Gibbons really implies the empire was so huge that it successfully integrated its territories from Africa to Asia to the Danube to Britain, and the peoples all became Roman. That's what its success. But right up front, he says the fall of the Roman Empire was due to the scope of it, and there was nothing beyond it, and this led to a lack of energy and a lack of innovation and a kind of decay and corruption because there was no place that wasn't the Roman Empire. And he ends this whole, that's sort of his premise, that he says here, the Roman, I'm quoting this, the empire of the Romans filled the world, and when that empire fell into the hands of a single person, the world became a safe and dreary prison for his enemies. So basically, and I find this struck me in regard to the United States, a kind of laziness or lack of innovation and energy that comes from being too big and having too much. So that's what I took, that's what I'm taking from Gibbons as leading to the decline.
Colin, want to comment?
Sure. And first of all, Julie, I'm glad that you're reading Gibbon. It's one of the the greatest works in the English language. I wish more people would read it. And I'm reminded of the one time when Ben Franklin actually met Gibbon. It was in 1776, and Gibbon had just published the first volume of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. And America, of course, had just broken away from Britain. And so these two men met each other, and Ben Franklin, in this kind of fake affability, went up to Gibbon and said, "Why don't you come over to America, and I'll help you collect some materials for your next book about the decline and fall of the British Empire." Gibbon has all kinds of fascinating observations, and the one that Julie mentions is one of the central ones, which is it's the problem of what Gibbon called immoderate greatness. The sheer what happens when your sheer size becomes an impediment. And this is one of the worrisome things that America faces. I call it the complexity problem. You are so big, your actions touch so many different people and places. There's no way to even keep track of the kinds of counteractions that you're setting into motion. That, in a sense, having ultimate power leads to a kind of powerlessness. And Gibbon points to that as, among many factors, one of the things that that afflicted Rome.
And Julie, thank you. But I think Paul in Bayside wants to question this idea of ultimate power in the contemporary sense. Paul, you're on WNYC.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I think that the author's definition of empire so freighted with modernisms as to be irrelevant. You can say that Rome and the United States are the most complex and powerful societies on earth, but that doesn't make us an empire. People, in the classic sense, an empire is an aggressive, militarist state that expands its border at the price of neighboring peoples. People come to the United States for economic opportunity. People weren't running to the borders of the Ottoman Empire, the Roman Empire, and clamoring to get in. They were trying to get away. So I really have to disagree with this. The latest adventure in Iraq is probably the closest thing that looks similar to what you could call a classic definition of empire. I just disagree with his premise.
Colin?
Well, in the main, I think Paul has a point in terms of the classic definitions of empire. But and the United States certainly is not doing the kinds of things that that Paul is mentioning. We're not, for the most part, going out trying to acquire more territory. And we never have, with the exceptions that you can number on just a few fingers. So, point granted. Nonetheless.
But more and more wealth, more and more influence?
I'm sorry?
More and more wealth, more and more influence, if not territory per se?
Well, there are new ways of doing old things. And what we do have is this view that our economic system and our political system do represent the way the world is supposed to work, and that these ideas, which have worked so well for us, really would work just as well for anybody. And I think you do see a pattern, particularly since the end of World War II, where we have tried to export both of those things.
So are you rooting for the fall?
No, I'm rooting for the survival of the things that I think are really at the heart of America. And I worry that by trying to hold on to too great a share of world power, by trying to preserve a kind of status quo, that we end up forgetting certain things at home. And I'm a believer in the American idea. I'm a believer in what our political system, for all its faults, has accomplished, and our economic system as well. I would like that to survive. And just precisely what the shape of our power is 100 years from now, I'm less concerned about that.
Let's go out with a couple of fun things you give us from Roman history in the book, and a couple of surprises, like the fact that the vomitoriums were not where Roman gluttons could make more room for their next course. They were something else, right?
Yes, that was a surprise to me, since I've been using the term vomitorium all my life, and if not using a vomitorium itself. But it turns out, in fact, that was just the name for the passageways leading out of a stadium or out of a theater, because it disgorged people from the arena or the theater. So that's how it got its name.
And that parting shot is really Parthian shot?
The Parthians were they were not Rome's equals militarily, but they were very skillful. And what they were able to do was, as they were fleeing or seeming to flee, they could turn around on their horses and they could shoot their arrows backwards, and it was a lethal tactic. And so it has given the name for one of those, wonderful, parting remarks that kind of leave you on the floor.
And I was intrigued by your suggestions that the Mormons might serve the same functions for the United States as the Catholic Church for ancient Rome. Did you come up with that before Mitt Romney entered the presidential race?
Well, maybe he'll be the reason it doesn't. I don't know. But the Mormons, I think, as many people know, are one of the fastest growing religions in the world, not just the United States, but in the world. And I think more Mormons are now outside the United States than inside. And it does make me wonder, just as Christianity grew with the support of Roman infrastructure, in a sense, whether the Mormon faith will grow on the wings of American power. It was kind of a throwaway thought, but those kinds of things are fun sometimes.
Colin Murphy has given us Are We Rome? The Fall of an Empire and the Fate of America, published by Houghton Mifflin. Very thought-provoking. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we go from Are We Rome to Are We Harvard in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.